The Pharisees approached Jesus and asked, "Is it lawful for a husband to divorce his wife?" They were testing him. He said to them in reply, "What did Moses command you?" They replied, "Moses permitted a husband to write a bill of divorce and dismiss her." But Jesus told them, "Because of the hardness of your hearts, he wrote you this commandment. But from the beginning of creation, God made them male and female. And for this reason, man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. So there are no longer two, but one flesh. Therefore, what God has joined together, no human being must separate." In the house, the disciples again questioned Jesus about this. He said to them, "Whoever divorces his wife and marries another commits adultery against her. And if she divorces her husband and marries another, she commits adultery." The Gospel of the Lord. Praise to you, Lord Jesus Christ. So what I want to do is connect the gospel and the book of Genesis right here, because when we're in Genesis, we're in chapter 2 of Genesis. The world was just created. Adam was created, and God's looking to give him a proper companion for life. And I'm looking over here because that's where the book is. And nothing's working, nothing's happening. And then so God puts Adam in his deep sleep and pulls a rib out, crafts Eve out of that rib, out of Adam's very flesh. They are the same flesh. And he creates Eve, and Adam wakes up and is, "Alas, flesh of my flesh, and bone of my bone. For out of her, this one has been taken. For out of her, man, this one has been taken." There's a play on words there in Hebrew that is 100% lost in translation. But anyways, and that is why a man leaves his father and mother and clings to his wife, and the two become one flesh. Now, what in the book of Genesis, we're using language that is, and this happens a lot in the Old Testament, especially in the most ancient books like this. We're using mythological language to describe actual things, real things. It's not just when we get into this, into the gospel, and as Jesus is expounding upon it, expanding upon it, we're not just getting some esoteric moral teachings. Well, yeah, you know, in our religion, we're not going to do divorce. We're just not going to do that. And others, they'll do that. And it's just kind of like, it's like going to a fast food restaurant. This one offers this one grills their burgers, this one fries them. No, it's like this is speaking to the very way we are wired as human beings, regardless of what religion we are. And that's what Genesis is telling us. Genesis is telling us, in answering, again, using the language that they would have used back then and any other society, that this is where we come from. This is what's wrong with us. This is what to do about it. And this is where we're going. And so the mythological language is pretty thin, so it doesn't take very much to get right underneath it and to really understand, regardless of what era, what millennia we're in. It's very accessible. But what I want to do is just go a little bit the way that John Paul II unpacked this. So when he was first made Pope, John Paul II, he was made Pope in 1978. And a short number of months later, well, actually just about a year, but he began a lecture series in the Wednesday audiences. All popes for any number of 100 years, I don't know how long, but longer than that, would give up what they call this Wednesday audience, which you might guess is on Tuesday. No, yeah, it is on Wednesday. And they come, and it's basically this discourse that he would give to anyone that's come to Rome. And you can have thousands of people there on any given Wednesday. And he used the 129 of those to unpack Genesis. This is the very first theme that he wanted to tackle as Pope. Just imagine, you're not Pope, you think, wow, if I was Pope one day, what would I do? He knew exactly where he was going. And he knew exactly what he wanted to talk about. And what he did throughout these 129 lectures, he's going into, it's about human nature before the fall, the original state of grace that Adam and Eve were created in, what we're actually designed for, what we're wired for, the fall itself, how that got twisted, and that's what's wrong with us. And he is particularly in applied to what Genesis really is really talking about right here. It's our human sexuality. That there's man and woman. And he's exploring these themes of in this John Paul II in these talks about marriage, about celibacy, about virginity. And he's expanding on some of Paul VI's teachings on contraception, humana vitae. He spent 129, he was really, really rearing to speak about this. And this series is commonly referred to as a series on the theology of the body. Please just give a head bob if you've ever heard of the theology of the body. Okay, I'm seeing not a whole lot of heads moving there. Okay, that's good. But those of you who do, you know what I'm talking about. Okay, that's fine. Today's your day. You're going to find out. So what is this? Well, in this theology of the body, what it's basically is he's developing a theology that applies to like what meaning, what spiritual meaning does our corporeity have, our bodies? And to kind of sum it up is that he's showing, and this isn't just his take on it. No, what he's doing is he's taking Genesis, he's taking the church's teaching throughout history, and he's summing up and presenting it to us a way that we really need to hear in the here and now. And that is that our physical bodies are a manifestation of our soul. And that the gestures and actions that we do with our body are very meaningful in wonderful ways. They have spiritual meaning. They have moral meaning, ethical, and they're consequential. It's not indifferent. And you know this very easily. You get cut off if not many of you will drive here, but let's say you're driving along and somebody tells you you're number one, and they do it Brooklyn style, and it's like, okay, well, that was charged with a lot of meaning right there. And you know that because you feel it inside. Like, but then they realize that, it's like our gestures and our actions. And the most meaningful gestures and the most beautiful gestures and actions that we can have incredibly deep and profound impact on us for good. The most wonderful, beautiful, most deeply meaningful things we do with our body. It's not just some kind of abstract intellectual thought thing that we do. Why was he going into this subject matter? Is because through his pastoral work in Poland, and also seeing this around the world, this is, again, 1978, the sexual revolution was in full form, still is today. But there it had just been really just taking off and was doing immense amounts of damage. And he's saying, we've got to bring a Catholic, a Christian worldview into that area right there. We need to change it from the inside. We need to baptize it and show what the beauty is of human intimacy. You probably didn't think you were going to hear about that today at church. Don't worry, I'll keep it PG-ish. I know we have a mixed audience here. So what he wants to do is make this an invitation for more meaningful, respectful, deeper relationships. In the context that you're all in is mostly dating and engagement. And maybe there's some married couples here as well. But I'm going to focus more on that first part. And there should be something for everybody here. Would you, dear parishioners of Old St. Pat's, like to have more meaningful, deeper relationships? Let me tell you, thank you very much for the thumbs up from over there in the peanut gallery. We're going to talk just a little bit about marriage. I'm sorry, this is going to go on a little bit longer than normal, and I'm long to begin with, but here, I'll try to keep it tight. Marriage is a sacrament that takes your soul and knits it together with somebody else. That's a wonderful thing. It takes your soul and knits it together, binds it together, melds it together so that there's no longer two, but one. And then this is like God's plans, he's saying, I would love for them to have the experience of being completely given to somebody else and be completely received by somebody else. Isn't that amazing? Isn't that a beautiful thing? But without danger, without there being risk and of being hurt and without, so that it'd be complete and total. And as the souls are bound and knit together in the sacrament of matrimony, which happens right here or right here, depending where the couple is getting married, the bodies also, that's the moment for the bodies then to be knit together, where there's a complete and total giving. Everything that I am is yours, all that yours is mine, and I will be faithful to you for all of my life. That's beautiful. And in that complete self-giving to each other, that is the place that God so ordained that human life would come from. That is the most beautiful thing you can possibly do with yourself. Spiritually, humanly, physically. It's a holy thing. It's a wonderful thing. It's a beautiful thing. Life comes from there in its design according to God's plan. Happens other moments as well. But imagine saying to God, you know what, you haven't knit our souls together, but we're going to do a little knitting on our own. And would you please stand aside? Because we don't want your blessing of new life to show up. Because we're not committed to each other. And we don't want the gift that you want to give us through this. All of a sudden, it becomes a much more serious thing. So what I want to do is, I know that this is a very difficult thing in New York. Other places too. Particularly difficult in the young adult scene here in New York. Because if that's what you desire and long for, it's really hard to find someone that's willing to go along with that plan of waiting, of living in expectation, rather than in the consummation, in the here and now. But this is where, if you raise the bar for yourself and in your relationships, God is going to bless that. And that's not some kind of prosperity gospel thing. No, that's like mathematical. As we live in the ways, this is not, like I said at the beginning, it's not some kind of esoteric teaching. This is the way we're wired. And so when we try to do something some other way, and it doesn't matter what religion you are, it's just not going to make you thrive. And you're not going to have the outcomes that you desire. Go ahead and live whatever way you want. And you say, I'm really miserable. Why is that? What's wrong with us? The book of Genesis has something to say about that. Pope John Paul II has something to say about the church that is shining a light on reality. So this is what happens. I see a lot of this. I do a lot of marriage preparation. Just finished a marriage prep course up in Westchester. A lot of weddings and so forth. Is the invitation to wait has such magnificent payoffs down the road. And I want to talk about it a little bit. For one, there is this thing called sin. There's that. And not that that's nothing, that's actually significant. But what also happens that when you're in a relationship with someone else, when you insert something into a relationship that doesn't belong there, it clouds your ability to discern if this is the right person I should spend the rest of my life with or not. When you put anything in there that doesn't belong in the relationship, it makes it harder. You pull things out, and then all of a sudden there's greater clarity. I can see better. I can think through this more clearly because I'm not being pressured or the relationship isn't being distorted in some kind of way. There's also a psychological component, or call it sociological, whatever, how you want to say it. Do you want your wedding night to be just like any other night going back to the apartment? Most people don't. They want it to be special. They want there to be this greater self-giving that wasn't there before, but now that we're married, there's something major different. It's not like we just went to and it went through some ceremony. You can do a ceremony down at City Hall. But this is a sacrament that's bringing your souls are being knit together. You also want to be sure that the decision that you make, and this is a reason why living together before being married is not a good idea. I know, it's like, I don't know, 85% of couples do that before getting married. I know, totally aware of that. But it's, like I said, there's problems with the discernment when there's cohabitation ahead of time. Because what's happening is that there's this inertia that gets brought into the relationship of, do we really want to break this up? Because we got the rent, and who's going to take care of that? And who's going to try to find this other another place to live? And who's going to get the dog? And it gets, life gets really complicated, and maybe it's better just not to have to work through the big conversations that we ought to have because we're afraid we might break up, so we just don't have these conversations. And now we, through inertia, end up married, and we really didn't think through things and talk through things the way we needed to. How's that for starting off your marriage? I think that has something to do with the reason why there is a higher rate of divorce among those who cohabitate prior to marriage. There's different stats on it, but there's different studies and so forth. But now what I want to do, okay, that was the beat down right there, okay? So now, don't worry, be a little happier stuff now. I know, this is super awkward. You were not expecting to hear this. I know this is what I'm saying is going to be, but statistically going to be impacting a lot of you, but bear with me. Because I want to tell you a beautiful thing. I'll tell you a story about one, and I'll kind of wrap up with this. There's a friend of mine that, I even asked him if I could share this story, even though I'm not going to share his name. A friend of mine was got engaged, or before he got engaged, he was dating this girl, both Catholic, and he had been with other women prior, and he was not interested in waiting till marriage. He's like, why? Like, why do that? But she said, no, we're gonna if you I'd love to date you, but this is my plan. I'm gonna wait till I'm married. And he's like, shoot. And so he's like, okay, well, let me maybe I'll wear her down after a while. And so he was kind of in that plan. But she stuck to her guns, and he started, okay, well, I think that maybe we're supposed to get married. So he started going along with this. And you know what, actually, and this is him describing it. He didn't like study theology of the body and all these things. This is just him speaking existentially what he was experiencing. He said, and it was strange, it's because it's like she started to become more beautiful. And my sense and respect for the dignity of who she is as a daughter of God was like growing and going upwards. And I wanted her to be a part of her life, yet I'm looking at myself and I'm thinking, no, I need to change. I need to work on myself. And so he did. He stopped smoking and he lost some weight, and then spiritually he started getting his act together and started going to Mass more regularly, and all of a sudden he started feeling that he was motivated to change because there was something he was looking forward to. Both in a very explicit way and also way back in his lizard brain too. And what happens is if you then, what in the opposite sense, like if she were to have given in, he'd say, okay, there is something primordial in the men that says, okay, well, I've got, quote, what I want, and so now there's not the pressure to work on myself. And so there's a maturity that is delayed in that moment as well. It's not to say it can't happen and it won't, but it's not the same kind of motivation. It's like not the same kind of drive. They later got married and said that there's no way I would have wanted to do it any other way than the way we did it. We waited. And you can imagine the beauty of their life. They have their first child now, and the fruit of their God binding their souls, knitting their souls together and their bodies together, has resulted in new life, which is the joy of their lives. So, anyways, I just gave you all a lot to think about. Theology of the body. There's a gentleman, his name is Christopher West. He has done a lot of work on this stuff. He's got a lot of videos out there that you can go. If you would like to scratch the surface more, dig deeper into this, saying, okay, I don't know, that's like a high bar, I'm not sure. Listen to him. Listen to the rationale. Pray about it. Ask our Lord, Lord, is this how I should live? Should this be a criteria I have with those that I date, that I let them know that this isn't going to be a part of the relationship? I tell you, the dividends are immense. Living in God's grace and the peace of the plan, there's so much more. God's just shining a light on the way he's made you through these things. It's not some kind of strange foreign thing foisted on us to control us and make us live the way people used to live. No, 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 no. It speaks to the very essence, the way you've been created, what you're wired for. Guaranteed increase in the quality of your relationships and the dignity of them as well. So count on my prayers. Because I know that is a tough, tough, tough battle if you're willing to walk this line. It's really tough. Work at it. The devil will try to knock you down. He wants you to believe a whole bunch of lies. And there's very little outside these walls that's going to try to convince you why this might be a good idea. So that's why you have to really root yourself into it. Lean into it. God will bless you for it.